Goeienaand luisteraars, baie welkom by Ek en my kind op 'n donderdag aand elke week hier op Radio Tygerberg 104 FM en die ons ek Sura Swart en saam met my nuwe Goliath.
Goeienaand liewe luisteraars, baie welkom. Vir my is dit weer eens lekker om hier te wees. Hallo Sura. Ons is hier in die middel van hierdie besige maar ook die pragtigste maand Oktober. En die onderwerp wat ons die afgelope paar weke hanteer is natuurlik geesteswelstand, a mental wellness. Dis geesteswelstand maand wat ons hanteer en in binnenkant onderwys het ons vrele programme en fokusse wat ons plaas op geesteswelstand. Vanaand gaan ons die gesprek voortsit en jy sal onthou verlede week het ons gesels met Melanie Black en Melanie het met ons gepraat oor geesteswelstand en sosiale media en ons het was 'n baie interessante gesprek wat ons weer eens moet optel op een of ander tyd. Maar ons wil baie graag voortgaan met hierdie gesprek want hoe hanteer ons geesteswelstand binne skole, né? En wat is dit wat ons as ouers en die publiek moet weet hieromtrent? In die ateljee vanaand het ons weer eens twee sielkundiges, né, van die onderwysdepartement, twee opvoedkundige sielkundiges van die Metro Suid onderwysdistrik. Ek gaan nou vir hulle aan u voorstel. Dit is Whitney Lefleur en Tommy Zonke en Kumalo. Hierdie twee sielkundiges werk in die Metro Suid onderwysdistrik. As jy wil weet waar dit is, dis daar Mitchells Plain, hier reg af na Steenberg en areas soos Wynberg en Philippi Oos, nee.
Versoek.
Dis in die suidelike voorstede. So dis waar hierdie twee dames werk. So ladies, welcome to you and you were ek gaan slaan oor na Engels toe want dis hoe hulle ook saam praat vanaand. So welcome to Ek en my kind.
Thank you.
Whitney, you are the school psychologist with the education department and responsibility of school psychological services is to render psychosocial support to learners and also supporting teachers to some extent. Topic this evening is a topic that is so common to education and so well-being, and that is anxiety. Now, learner anxiety is often linked to the educational experience. I remember when I was at school, if you are struggling with certain things in the curriculum, you're automatically anxious, which is a normal emotion to have. But what differentiates normal anxiety from anxiety as a disorder?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. So when we look at anxiety, we can distinguish between normal anxiety and anxiety as a disorder. And there are three categories that we look at. We look at the intensity of the symptoms, the duration thereof, as well as the impact on functioning. So when you look at anxiety as normality, the intensity won't be that huge on the person's functioning. It's often quite temporary. So it will last for only a certain period of time. And it often can be dealt with if you implement some coping strategies. So, for example, the normal anxiety would be someone feeling nervous before an exam, and that would actually motivate them to go and study. Whereas anxiety as a disorder, it will have such a debilitating impact that the person will feel very worried about failing. They will be concerned about forgetting things. And so they're not able to function to the optimal ability. So that's kind of the difference between the two, if you want to distinguish between or general anxiety and anxiety as a disorder.
Yes, what you said is true. And also the difference can be that the normal anxiety is temporary. It's just the normal stresses of the day. But when it's a disorder, it's so excessive. It's impair you and make you to be unable to focus, and it makes you to also be sick in the body, and it makes you to be impaired and unable to do some of other things that you normally do in a daily basis.
I can imagine that if we talk about anxiety with learners, that it would have a very specific impact and a definite impact on the learner in the classroom. Do we get learners getting anxiety attacks, if we use that term, in the classroom? What does it look like? What are the impact then?
Yeah, no, definitely. We basically work with learners who do experience severe symptoms of anxiety. And it often looks like the learner who withdraws. So they would lay on their heads, for example. They don't necessarily participate in the classroom or engage in the curriculum or with their peers around them. You see learners, there's a reduced level of attendance, so they'll stay absent from school. Okay. They're often the learners who also experience some psychosomatic symptoms. So they'll say they have a headache or their stomach is cramping, or they are very irritable in the classroom. So it's difficult for the teacher to relate to them or even their own peers. You'll see a reduce in their performance, so their marks might go down or it generally stagnate because, again, it impacts on their functioning. Remember, for learners, their job is to go to school. That's their job. So if they can't work, if they can't be in a classroom, then that is a red flag for us.
That's true. And also what I can add is that sometimes they'll be quick to start fights, and also they will take everything negative and as a criticism, and also try to disrupt and distract the teachers and also other learners because they cannot keep up with the grades, they cannot grasp the content because they're distracted, and also they have low focus and short-term attention span. So at times they can scream, at times they can cry, at times they can just pass some negative and insults, words or comments to other learners. They can be bullies. That's also some signs that they have anxiety inside. They can be taken to a separate room in a school or a counseling room to be addressed or corrected there.
You know, Ntombi Zonke, you're speaking about that now. No. I've had anxiety very close to my home when my daughter was diagnosed with that. It affected her life, her self-image, everything about her, right? To the extent that it was part of a diagnosis for specific learning disorder, and anxiety was also coupled to that. It required her actually to be placed in a school for special needs. You understand? Now, my question to you, what is the prevalence of what you are explaining right now in schools right now? Do you have many cases like that, or is it just normal anxiety that is often experienced, or are we having learners that has this higher sense of this experience?
Yes, we have so much cases. Learners, sometimes they do copy from others what they are doing or how are they experiencing anxiety, and they are quick to diagnose themselves. So when they're feeling tired or maybe a certain module or certain subject is very difficult for them, they will start now to have these somatic symptoms that they're feeling so very tired, so very sick, they're having headaches. And then they will start to go to Google and check what is anxiety and depression symptoms, and they will start to act out. The more they practice these symptoms, it's the more now they feel like it's a reality. Then they start to scream. They start to show all the symptoms. But to them, it starts as a joke and a trend that my friend is now suffering from this. Therefore, also, I am depressed. I feel this way because they are young. So in schools, we also share these awarenesses and also this knowledge that it's not everyone that can be diagnosed with anxiety. Because if you are failing a subject, it doesn't mean that you cannot try and also learn to understand it and excel in it, and not just like take it as a disorder.
Just from my experience, our learners nowadays and even our parents are more informed and more educated. Information is out there. So it's not always a bad thing, I guess, if you have Google or if you know of people who also possibly experience the same symptoms. And I think it's because people are more informed. They are more aware of anxiety. They are more aware of specific learning disorders. So the prevalence rates are increasing because people are being more educated. So they're able to identify the signs that they feel anxious. I think at one point it's good to have a patient or a learner opposite you who knows how they feel, because they are the best indicator of their own experiences. But it's also an opportunity for us to psychoeducate and say, okay, so you've identified these symptoms. Because the reality is, as the world evolves, as life becomes a little bit more stressful, people will start to experience more anxiety. And I think our job is just to normalize the anxiety symptoms. It's okay to feel nervous. Mm. It's okay to be worried. But let's normalize it, because we want you to function at your best. We want you to be a healthy, contributing member of your school and one day of society. So, yeah, the prevalence rates are increasing, and it's getting younger and younger. And we see it, I think, last week I worked with a learner who was in grade 2. Who's experiencing psychosomatic symptoms. They can't necessarily verbalize what it is, but they can show you through their behavior, as kids do communicate through behavior, and they're able to say, I don't feel well, my tummy is paining. Why do I feel that way? Our job is to help them navigate through that. So, yeah.
When we started off with this series, we spoke about mental well-being and why is it so important that one would take care of your mental well-being and mental health. And this is exactly what we see. To me, it seems as if our youth and our learners are struggling to solve problems, to come to decisions and to solve problems. So everything becomes a crisis sort of, and then that traumatizes them. And then you find what you've now explained as a fight or a flight or a freeze. I've listened to what you've said, and this is exactly what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we could then put effort into helping our learners to solve problems, to see things more objectively, and to not only respond to what emotionally I'm feeling, but also to bring thinking skills in and look at it as, isn't it a normal reaction to a situation, and is there no other way in which I can deal with it in the end? I think that is what we need to concentrate on, and I think that is also the whole purpose of awareness raising on the importance of mental wellness for each and every one of us.
No, definitely. And if you look at the correlation between mental well-being and anxiety, there's a direct correlation. If you're not healthy physically or healthy emotionally, the chances of you of your anxiety symptoms being heightened is more because you're not able to think clearly. So it's true what you say. We have to advocate from a holistic approach. We can't only focus on academics, but the child is suffering emotionally. You're not going to get the best learner. You're not going to get the best performance out of that child. So I completely agree with you. I think our job as psychologists for the WCED is to always advocate for a child to be holistically well. Always.
Taking good care of your mental health is very important, because the more healthier your thoughts are, also it's contribute to your behavior as well, and how you tackle some of other problems, and also have some solution focused mindset rather than always trying to see the negative and the criticism and also the negative things as of every situation. And also eating healthy, drinking more water, exercise, have a gratitude journal. Every day you write beautiful things that has happened. It really shapes you to always be positive and strong in life. Whatever comes, you just tackle it with a positive mindset.
And Tommy, I'm listening to you now. The teacher in the classroom sets the tone for the atmosphere in the classroom. And you realize that the role of the teacher is so, so important. In terms of anxiety, and especially the state of affairs right now with teachers having their own anxieties in terms of how education is impacted upon austerity measures and teachers losing posts and schools, posts are being reduced, etc. So there's a natural anxiety that's out there. Mm. But of course, the teacher setting the tone in the classroom, how does teacher anxiety influence the classroom dynamics?
At first, the teacher will be panicking because they have a lot of classrooms and grades to teach. At times, it will also affect their lesson plans, the preparation to be prepared for different classes, different learners as well, because learners, they have different personalities. Others are rude. Others, they are coming from environments. They were not given money. They were not given food. They were not given love and attention. So it's a lot in those spaces. So when teachers are coming with their personal distresses, finances, relationships at times, they are going through divorce and everything, it can affect the environment. So I can advise that teachers can rely with their colleagues as well to just share whatever they're going through, because the more you share, the more these negative things or whatever troubles that you are having subsidize or decreases the way how you are able to respond and act in different spaces as a human being. So when they get there in classrooms, they have to be positive, come with positivity and show that they have passion, they have love, and they treat kids as their own so that they can be able to navigate through every lesson and also tackle every problem they encounter in the classroom.
I think, possibly speaking from my own experience as a teacher and what I've observed myself, it's so true what you said, Neville. A teacher sets the temperature in the classroom. If the teacher is overwhelmed, the learners pick up on it, and then they become restless. If the teacher is calm, the kids pick up on it, and they are calm. But what I've observed, even if you go on social media, you can see that teachers are truly struggling and are experiencing severe symptoms of anxiety or depression, and I think the reality is that their motivation is impacted. And then they question their passion. Why am I in this job? And it often has a ripple effect. Like my colleague said, there's a lack of engagement with the curriculum. There's a lack of engagement with the students. You don't feel like being there because there's so much on your plate that you have to deal with. There is difficulties in making decisions. As a teacher, you have to be very quick on your feet. And so instead of making the quick decisions, you either just withdraw from it and you see it in the classroom. And then the class, the learner starts to act out, and then it becomes a classroom management problem, which teachers then have to deal with. And that heightens the symptoms, that heightens the possibility of a burnout. Teachers often also experience psychosomatic symptoms where they have stomach bugs, they get ulcers, they have headaches, and then they are booked off. Now they're already on a backlog of work, and now they come back and they have to catch up, and there's admin. So the reality is, I think what I said yesterday even, is that teachers are people first before they are professionals. They have emotions too. And it's sometimes very difficult for them themselves to navigate through that. But it does have a ripple effect on kids.
While I was listening to you, I thought about the fact that what we hear from our schools is that we are having learners presenting, more and more learners presenting with behavioral problems. Now, what you've described here are learners with behavioral problems, in inverted commas, because this is how teachers are experiencing them at school. It has an effect on the discipline situation, and they do see it as learners with behavioral problems. What do we do within Western Cape Education to support our teachers, to also help them to identify and to distinguish between a learner acting from a stance of anxiety and not being a learner with just simple behavioral problems? What is it that we are offering our learners?
Yeah, so within the department, we have psychologists and social workers who provide workshops for teachers and parents and students, just to capacitate them in terms of what are the signs and symptoms of various disorders like anxiety, or how to identify when a learner has a behavior challenge in comparison to maybe a psychological problem. So we do work, we collaborate with the schools, where we work with teachers and stakeholders and parents. And so we provide counseling skills, we provide screening if there is, screening and assessments if there is, if that is needed for further intervention. With educators, we don't necessarily counsel them per se, but we provide containment and then refer them to the employee wellness service provider for them to also receive some counseling as well. But I think what we always advocate for is to work collaboratively. So we have to work with the teacher, we have to work with the learner and the parents, and then ensure that they get the necessary intervention and support, in a nutshell.
Teachers respond to this?
Teachers are often very welcoming. They need the support. And so I think if they're going to refuse it, it will be to their detriment, but ultimately to the detriment of the learner. So teachers are very open to collaborating with the department and seeing it, how can we help? We often sit in the classrooms and do observations and then provide guidance. We definitely respect that the teacher is the manager of the classroom. Our job is to come and support, come alongside that teacher and guide when they are experiencing some challenges.
Whitney and Ntombi Zonke, we obviously don't have enough psychologists and social workers to go around to do what you are just explaining. Now, how do we capacitate the system as a system as such to be more supportive? Mm. So the system can be informed as such, instead of psychologists, social workers running out for every incident or every child, because that's not always possible for us to do so. But as a WCED, we need to capacitate the system as a whole to be more of support to the way the needs are. How do we do that?
I think you have to look at that from, I like using Bronfenbrenner's systemic approach to things. So no one can function on their own. We don't work in isolation or in silos. So we've learned that we need to grab hands with parents. We have to grab hands with different departmental sectors like the Department of Health, the Department of Social Development, and work together to enhance and capacitate that exact system that you are talking about. Because the reality is that child goes home to a different environment, but in that environment, there must be a resource that can be activated for the help to come to the learner. And that is where we partner with different organizations, NGOs, churches, youth groups, just to come alongside and guide. I'm sure you probably know of Moy.
Yeah, what you've said is true, because we have to also rely on the parents, because they spend most of the time with these learners. So if they can be able to share some positive words to their kids each and every morning, try to be there for them whenever they are sharing whatever that has happened in the school, then when they come to school, they are motivated, and also they have strategies that maybe if this learner do this to me, then I can maybe report, and also this is what I can do. Maybe I can attend to a counselor and share what I'm going through, or share with also friends. Like, parents can promote healthy relationships to their kids, because at times they will share negative things and then kids will be portraying what they're seeing at home. So they have to model healthy coping strategies and mechanisms at home so that we will have lesser cases in schools.
Yeah. And we encourage schools to have like awareness campaigns and speak about mental health, speak about anxiety or depression or suicide, because we don't want a child to suffer in silence and think that it's wrong for them to experience the emotions that they are feeling. Because if people are informed, the system is enhanced. If they don't know and not educated, you won't know of the system, you won't know of the support, you won't know who to partner with. So I think even just doing training workshops is so vital and so important for parents, for teachers, for learners, for stakeholders, because people often, and even children, they think that they can suffer alone, they must suffer alone, but you don't have to. There is support out there for you.
Parents, if you could now give a little bit of guidance to parents, what to do, how to identify early, because I'm always aware of the importance of early identification and intervention that would then sort of prevent more tragic situations in terms of the life of the child. How do they identify? What do they do if they then, also practical, how do they help their child to overcome or to manage the anxiety when it would then present with the child?
I think for parents, first and foremost, is to have open communication with your child. Have that space, create that space for your child to be able to verbalize how they feel and not be judged for it. So, for example, if a child says, I'm scared I'm going to fail, I'm scared, I'm worried I'm going to forget my work, and the parent says, but why are you worried? You know you studied. That is already an expectation that you're putting on the learner. That's pressure you're putting on the child. And if he or she forgets, they will feel judged. So try and provide a space with open communication and non-judgmental. Kids learn through modeling behavior. Yeah. So if they see that mom and dad cope with stress in a certain way, they'll pick up on that. So for parents, just to be mindful in terms of how they deal with certain things, because again, children see that. Structure for parents, structure, routine is very important. Remember, with anxiety, you feel out of control, right? And one of the things that enhance being out of control is if there's no structure and routine. So parents must stick to a structure, even if it's the weekend, stick to your structure and routine. It provides the kid with regulation, right? Because you want him to be able to function at the optimal best.
Yeah, what you say is very important. They have to have a routine. They have to have rules that maybe at 9 o'clock, you have to stop using your cell phone. Because at times they will keep on like using the cell phone excessively and for a longest time, because they are trying to hide that they are now withdrawn, they are now in isolation, they are dealing whatever that they are dealing with. So if the parent can be able to engage them, whatever that they are doing, you wash the dishes, you study, and they can be able to monitor them, then kids will feel that they are not alone, but the parents is with them.
And I think then the red flags, we always call them red flags, because we don't expect parents to know the criteria for anxiety. Mm. We'll say, look at if there's a decrease in the marks. All of a sudden, it's low grades, refusal to go to school, avoidance. You'll see they don't want to participate in activities that they used to, or they don't want to do their work, their schoolwork. Negative talk, pick up on how they speak about themselves and others. Withdrawal, isolation. If you notice that they're always in their room. They don't come out and participate with the family or have supper. Or if they do have supper with you, they get up immediately once they are done. Constantly on the phone. Be aware of that. I think the phone can either be a good thing or a bad thing. And we're getting a lot of parents saying, my child's always on the phone. There's a reason why your child is on the phone, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I always advocate for this. As a parent, know your child. Know when they are quiet and know when they are loud. Because even when they are quiet, that is still communicating something. Mm. And also, I think collaborate with the teacher. Speak to the teacher. Remember, teachers spend up to 9 hours with a child a day. And they often know the kids the best. So ask the teacher, did you pick up something? Did you notice something? If you've picked up, please WhatsApp me so that we can kind of work together to figure out what is wrong, what is going on. And also look at your children's friends. Who are they friends with? Because the reality is adolescents, when they go through that stage, friends become the most important in comparison to parents. So they will go with their friends. They will act like their friends. They will talk like their friends. But as for a parent, it is your responsibility to pick up on the changes in your child.
Ntombi Zonke and Whitney, I think what you've shared here this evening with the listeners out there is so important. Mm. It is so real in many households, and I think many parents identified with much of what you said this evening. I would like to thank for being here this evening and to share your wisdom and your knowledge with us. I know this topic can go on and on and on. There's a lot of angles to it, and at some stage I think you need to come back, that we just explored some much more, but thank you for being here. May God bless you in the work that you're doing in our schools there, Mitchell's Plain and the surrounding areas. Ntombi Zonke Nkumalo and Whitney Lefier, thank you for being with us on
Eat Mekent. Thank you so much for having us.
Mm-hmm. Met daai sê ons dan, tot ziens en goeie nacht.